In the February issue of History Today, Dan Whittaker focuses on a legendary German commander of the First World War, Paul von Lettow-Vorbeck, who achieved mythic status for his activities in East Africa. Dan, your article opens with a description of von Lettow's funeral, and we have a clip of this event on our website, but I think it would be helpful if you could just describe von Lettow for those people who don't know. You know, what sort of a man was he in the context of his times, and why has he attained sort of legendary status in military histories of the First World War?
Well, he was born in 1870, so more or less when Germany was born, and he came from the Prussian landed gentry, the so-called Junker class, who made up the bulk of German military officers. His education was in quite harsh military boarding schools, then cadet, then commissioned, age 20 as a lieutenant. His father was a difficult man and also a military hero from the recent Franco-Prussian War. So military success and the German military having created their country, if you like, overshadowed his life probably. And his attitudes were typical of that sort of background. So unquestioning belief in Kaiser, in the German military as a positive institution, and in Germany as a rising country surrounded by and outnumbered by its enemies.
So was he exceptional in any way, or was he typical? What is he known for in terms of the East African campaign and the outcome of that war, you know, both for the Germans and the Allies?
From the Allies' point of view, he was a cause of great difficulty, really. East Africa was just a sideshow to the European theatre. But von Lettow's actions were a source of chronic pain, I suppose, for the Allies. He began his actions right at the beginning of the war, invading what's now Kenya, British East Africa, in August 1914. And he was still fighting 2 weeks after the end of the war, before they convinced him to surrender in Zambia, what's now Zambia. In between, he tied down, estimates vary between 150,000 and 400,000 Allied soldiers, and perhaps 500,000 to 1 million porters as well, which compares to his force, which was 14,000 at its peak, and ended up at about a tenth of that size. So during that time, he faced the armies of Britain, South Africa, India, Belgium, Portugal, and a lot of the African colonies, Nigeria, Kenya, Ghana. His campaign was something of a career graveyard for many British generals. On the German side, they were certainly pleased, and they showed that through promotions. He arrived a colonel and left a general. Medals, he got the Iron Cross, as his father had, and the highest Prussian award, known as the Blue Max. But he had minimal contact, really, with Germany throughout the war, and no support from them. He only had occasional bits of news, such as that his brother had died on the Western Front. He did achieve his aims, though. He kept all of those Allied soldiers away from Europe, and he was unbeaten throughout the war. Perhaps it's also worth mentioning that his actions had a great impact on the Africans as well. Generally, death and devastation in a war that could have been avoided. Indeed, the German governor of East Africa tried very hard to keep neutrality and avoid conflict, but von Lettow really wasn't having any of that.
So he's viewed as successful by the Germans, but not so much by the East Africans, and the Allies have had to give him credit for what he achieved as a guerrilla leader, really. But what is it? Your article is really taking the bull by the horns and questioning the myth of von Lettow, and I wonder if you can tell us why you think it's appropriate to question his status as a a military hero?
Well, there are some genuine reasons for his success, which should be confirmed. His training and experience were exemplary. He had experience in the Boxer Rebellion in China and in the German Southwest African conflict. But and as we saw from the Olympics, I suppose, obsessive preparation from childhood over decades and the motivation of national glory and a national institution that's equally obsessed can deliver success. He also had a positive attitude towards the Africans who served under him, the Askaris, as his African soldiers were known, and they themselves were very experienced soldiers. He was definitely a very determined man and always looking to innovate, which he had to do under difficult circumstances. So those are all aspects of the myth of his success, which are correct. He was an accomplished and a heroic leader. But there are other aspects of that of myth, if you like, which I think do deserve a bit more questioning. The story as it's presented is that his success was all down to him, that he was a great guerrilla leader in particular, that he could have continued the fight indefinitely. And I think each of these emerges as somewhat weaker when you look at it a little bit more closely. If we take him being a guerrilla leader, for instance, and in American military colleges, he's still taught as a case study of the perfect guerrilla leader. But he never really enjoyed popular support beyond his soldiers. And he did, whenever he got the chance, try to fight in a conventional manner, only resorted to guerrilla tactics when he was forced to. Really, his campaign was more of an expertly handled retreat than anything else, I'd say. He also benefited greatly from problems on the Allied side. They had weak leadership. Sometimes they hadn't really studied African wars in the way that the Germans had. I mean, the Germans probably learned more from the Boer War than the British did. They had coordination problems, as they were drawn from many countries. Their supply lines were stretched hundreds and hundreds of miles through difficult country, whereas he was always in a small unit on the move. And they were hit particularly hard by the diseases prevalent in the tropics. So the myth isn't all it's made out to be, but it's perhaps just as interesting to ask, why did this myth develop? And that, I think, is down to the extreme German need for heroes at the end of having lost the First World War. Perhaps the Americans venerate him because they love the idea of a non-communist guerrilla. The myth was particularly important in Germany because it formed an important part of what was the Dolchstoßlegende for Germans, the stab in the back idea, mm-hmm. that the Nazis profited from, that the Germans wouldn't have lost if they hadn't been somehow betrayed.
How did he contribute to his own myth-making? Was he aware of it?
Certainly he was. He contributed fulsomely, I'd say. He published two memoirs of the East African campaign, an autobiography. He was a regular speaker in Germany and in Britain, formed international friendships, in particular with a lot of the Allied generals that he'd fought against. And this is in the interwar period in particular. During that time, he was probably acting somewhat competitively. The German governor, Schnee, that I mentioned, was an enemy of his and was publishing his own memoirs, and Schnee became quite a senior Nazi. He probably was also competing with the heroic status of his father. And also, like a lot of Germans in the interwar years, he was pretty much broke. He had to support a young family without any income, so whatever he could get from publishing and speaking was very welcome. And he's also a good writer. He tells a good story, perhaps somewhat obsessed with hunting, but they're a good read, his books.
So you mentioned von Schnee just now, who was the governor of East Africa while von Leto was out there on campaign. Can you talk a little bit about von Leto's attitude towards colonial East Africa and his interaction in earlier campaigns there with von Trotha, controversially?
Yes, Africa for von Leto involved plenty of hardship and danger. He contracted malaria, he lost an eye in fighting. In the last couple of years of the First World War, he was constantly in danger of death, probably. And I think he absolutely loved it. For a Prussian officer, there's no problem with hardship and danger. He had, during the First World War, great power, and he wielded it successfully, which is what many soldiers will want. He also had the enjoyment, I think, of outwitting the British generals, running rings around the Belgian and Portuguese ones, staying out of the clutches of Smuts, who was the great Boer War hero from South Africa. And he engaged with Africa, with the people. He learned Swahili. His books are full of illustrations of Africans, for instance, not of the German soldiers. And he also enjoyed the land, I think. He covered an enormous amount of territory during the campaigns. A lot of it was beautiful and filled with game. As I said, he was a great hunter. His troops and the Allies had to contend with lions, crocodiles, hippos, as much as each other.
But what about his relationship with the people?
Well, he was at the same time certainly an imperialist and, like most of that era, a racist. The South West African campaign before the First World War was a dark chapter, I would say, in his career. He was involved as an assistant to von Trotha in South West Africa, who committed what we'd now class as war crimes, really, in his quite excessive suppression of a rebellion there. But von Leto was what was in those days the idea of a successful soldier. I suppose he didn't have much conscience about the devastation and death that he caused. That was outweighed by any improvement he could get in the odds of winning the war for Germany and probably in improving his career.
So perhaps finally you could tell us a little bit about his reputation today, both in Germany and in East Africa. Is it time to abandon the prism of heroics as a means of understanding historic wars, do you think?
His reputation in Germany has remained fairly strong. There are plenty of Leto Vorbeck Strasses in German towns. He benefited, I suppose, from being a great soldier, but also a non-Nazi. He had a mixed relationship with the Nazis, but never joined the party. And that's allowed the Germans to retain him as a hero, a military hero, when they hadn't really had many. His reputation amongst historians has swung over the years. And the idea of a hero being the way to understand historic wars, I think is probably something that you at History Today will have debated more closely than anyone. For me, heroism is a small part of the explanation of why things happen, and the heroic stories are usually biased ones, I'd say. There were many heroic African mothers and elders in that campaign who held the villages together when the men had been press ganged and all the food had been requisitioned. Their story doesn't get told. But humans do, we do need stories, and heroism can bring those stories alive. I work myself in East Africa, and whenever I have to face the very minor hardships and problems that I do, I often ask myself, what would Von Netto think, to console myself. He does remain a figure that's much talked about, particularly in Tanzania.
What, so Africans are talking about him still, in your experiences working there today?
He's an important figure in Tanzanian history. He's a reminder of the German colonial past, which is unpopular, but at the same time, his black African soldiers were very successful. They beat white European armies, and I think that contributed to the confidence that some people in Tanzania needed to mount their own independence movement. So it's a mixed picture.
And are they re-evaluating that picture now, particularly at the anniversary, the centenary of the First World War is coming around again?
I think they will be. I look forward to my next trip back to see how that's going. But history is very much alive there still.
Thank you very much, Dan Whittaker.